Today's episode of the Reality TV Happy Hour is brought to you by the Robinza Podcast app. Go to robinzawebsite.com/app today to download it for yourself. It's free. You can get every single episode of Robinza Podcast, post-show recaps, and Reality TV wrap-ups in the same place. Who wouldn't want to do that? There's 39 days worth of content. It's so much. You're going to keep yourself busy forever. It's excellent. I love it so much. Check it out today. robinzawebsite.com/app.
It's the Reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar. Guess you can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P.
R-H-A-P.
Reality TV Happy Hour. Reality TV Happy Hour. Oh, yeah.
Greetings, true believers, and welcome to another edition of the Reality TV Happy Hour. My name is Jordan Parhar, and this week I'm here to talk some Survivor Cambodia with you on robezawebsite.com. Today I'm joined by a great guest. He's one of my favorite people, really. He's amazing. He's excellent. He's got a lot of things in common with me, but the difference is he's actually good at all the things that I'm not good at. He's really a great specimen. He's Big Brother Canada 3's fan favorite. He's the future Big Brother Canada All-Star player.
Oh,
it's,
please.
It's Kevin Martin, ladies and gentlemen.
What's up, Jordan?
Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm pretty sure, anyway, that was, what do I say? Anyway, great to be here, man. Thank you for the kind words as always. And I'm excited to talk some Survivor. I was very excited when you asked me on the podcast. I love Big Brother. There's a special place in my heart for Big Brother, but we're talking about Survivor. I've considered Survivor the best show on television for the last 4 or 5 years. I literally sit down and crave that show every single week. And you know how much we talked about it all the time when we were mourning our losses in that Big Brother Canada 3 jury. All we did was talk Survivor to fill the time. And here we do. Let's go. Let's do this. I'm very, very excited. Thank you for the warm welcome, my friend.
Hey, no worries. It's well deserved, Kevin. And yeah, I was very excited when you said you wanted to come on because I know you're such a big fan of the show. I think that you and I are very similar in terms of our fandom. I think other than the fact that you started watching it a little bit later than I did, but you started watching because of your grandparents. I started watching it because of my parents. Mm-hmm. So it's a great show. We both love it. And I think it's safe to say that you're in the same boat with me that you would probably have rather played Survivor than Big Brother, right? Is that safe to say?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's physically more demanding, but in terms of a social strategical game, I prefer Survivor. There's less variance. If you socially align yourself, get an alliance going, you can really steamroll. Whereas in Big Brother, someone wins an HOH, you're on the block, you're out. It happens. You know what I mean? Like yeah.
There's no triple evictions in Survivor. Exactly.
I mean, there are twists, and we kind of saw a twist this week with the early merge. I mean, it's not really labeled as a twist, but merging at an unexpected time with 13 people, you can consider that a twist. That's something unexpected. But anyway, me personally, if there was a Canadian version of Survivor, I would have preferred to be on it just because I would have liked. But I mean, God, I mean, you're picking between the two best things in the world here. We're really picking straws. Oh, my God. Being like, yeah, they're both Big Brothers. It's right there for me, but Survivor, it's a little bit better.
Yeah, I'm with you just a little bit. And I think it's maybe because I'm biased. I started watching Survivor before I started watching
Big Brother. There's more nostalgia with Survivor, too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. So thank you so much for tuning in today. I really do appreciate it. I want to give a huge shout out to the great Ryan Elder for creating the new theme song for the podcast. And if you're listening to this in iTunes or in the audio version on robezawebsite.com, you heard that theme song. I think it's great. I think Ryan did a great job. And I without him, I wouldn't have learned that you can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P, Kevin.
I heard the song last podcast I listened to. Great productional work, JP. You've really upped your game here. Got to give you a big round of applause for that productional song.
Hey, maybe you want to give me some props because we're live on Blab, Kev.
Yes, here we go.
But no, seriously, thank you to Ryan. I mean, he's making me look a lot better than I should be looking. I'm not worthy of having a theme song. So I really, really sincerely appreciate that. Please go follow Ryan on Twitter and thank him for me. He's at Ryan Elder Music, and you can check out all the great stuff that he's doing there. Okay, so today we're live on Blab, so that means we can take your questions live. You guys can come on and chat with us live. So what Kevin and I are going to do is we're going to talk about the episode for a bit. We'll see how long it goes. And then afterwards, you guys can come on the camera. You can talk to Kevin and I. You can ask your questions. You can also ask your text questions as well. Just go in the chat room, type in /Q, and then type in your question, and I'll be able to see it on the left side of my screen and take your questions throughout the show. So should be a lot of fun today. I'm very excited to break down this post-merge episode of Survivor. In case you missed it this week, you can go over to robiswebsite.com and check out Rob's interview with Trish Hegarty from Survivor Cogion. Kevin, have you checked that one out yet?
No, I just listened to the exit interview last night and Know-It-Alls last night as well. So I didn't get to the Trish Hegarty. There's usually those three every week, right? Know-It-Alls, exit interview, and then the guest, right? I usually 100% get the exit interview and the Know-It-Alls. And then if I have time, I love to squeak that third one in, but it's hard to find time sometimes. But man, Rob's putting out some great content.
It's a lot. Yeah, he's putting in his time. He's doing a great job as always. And if you're listening to my show, surely you were checking out Rob's stuff. But yeah, just wanted to plug that. Definitely check those shows out. Trish did a really good job. The funniest part of the episode, though, was there was one point in which Trish didn't know that Rob, like, you can find out that she doesn't know that Rob played Survivor before. And not only that he played Survivor before, but twice. She said, "Hey, well, Rob, when are you going to leave your life for 36 days and go out and play Survivor? You're never going to do that." And Rob's like, "Yeah, well, just that once."
That is hilarious. Yeah, that's amazing.
It's pretty awesome. So check that out if you haven't already, just for that moment. I think it's at about the 56-minute mark of the podcast. It's quite hilarious. There also is an appearance by yours truly on the voicemail, so check that out. I made several mistakes, and I just wanted to correct those now. One, Kevin, I said that Bye 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 was by the Backstreet Boys and not NSYNC, so I really messed that one up. That was a big mistake. Although you and I were both born in the year 1993, we were 6 years old when that song came out. So
we get a pass on that one.
Maybe a little bit of a pass. It's still pretty inexcusable, but that happened there. I also said that Stephen Fishback was he was the mad scientist in terms of AJ Mass's 13 archetypes. He was Captain Loophole. So I messed that up as well. I also said that the presidential elections will be held in 2018 and 2022. That's because I'm Canadian and I really don't know anything. So yes, I know it's every 4 years. So 2016, 2020, and 2024. I was talking about how Eliza Orlins should run for president, Kevin. So you guys should check that out if you haven't already. It's an interesting.
I don't think Eliza would do well in politics. I'm not going to lie. Sorry, I love her to death. I think she's one of the funniest survivors ever. But oh God, her in the White House.
How dare you, Kevin? How dare you insult Eliza Orlins? Okay, let's get into this episode. I've rambled on for enough. Definitely, we're going to be posting this on YouTube afterwards. So go check us out on there. Reality TV Rehapups on YouTube, Reality TV Rehapups on iTunes. It's robhasawebsite.com/rehapups. Or just for this feed only, for the Rehappy Hour only, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/rehappyhour. That is happy hour with an R at the front. Okay, Kevin, the merge has happened. It's upon us here. 13 people are at the merge. This is the largest merge tribe in Survivor history. We have never had a tribe of 13. So what do you think about this decision by production to put the merge at this point of the game? Do you think it's too early to put all of these people together, all of these second chancers on the same tribe? Or do you like the move? Do you think that it was a good decision?
I understand the move. I can get in production's mindset, right? Especially with this cast, there's a lot of hard players. They're all playing to win, and the merge is usually a crazy time, whether it's 11 or 12. So I can see them sitting behind closed doors being like, sneaky, sneaky, we're going to put 13 crazy players in a merge, and it's going to be one of the most chaotic merge episodes ever. And it kind of worked out. People went nuts. You know what I mean? I mean, this would be a crazy in a normal season, but with specifically this cast, it went crazy. And as I alluded to earlier, in Big Brother, there's twists. Survivor, there are twists also. This is a twist. There's some people that say, no, this is just a merge. This is a twist. This is something that's never happened before. These players have never planned to merge at 13. Everything done in these shows, like from the moment they get on the beach, they are calculated, and no one was playing to play for a merge at 13. If they knew the merge was at 13, things would have been drastically different. Like, would have cast voted out Spencer last week, no, her decision process would have been totally different. So this is a twist that I think kind of hurt Cass and Sierra a lot. But it was crazy. I mean, I personally love when the tried game ends. So the fact that it ended early is great for TV. And yeah, I really enjoyed the early twist. It was crazy. Feels like the next couple of episodes might be predictable, though. I hope they're not. I hope some flips happen. But yeah, it was nuts. It was crazy. And I got to give a little like tip to production. They surprised me, at least, and surprised the survivors for sure. You could see that, especially when they were reading the note. They're like, merge? Like, you can see, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was. I thought maybe that they would perhaps think that, oh, yeah, well, this isn't actually merge. This is just a fake merge, just like in Survivor Thailand and Survivor Gabon. This can actually be the real thing, but indeed it was. So it was. I was excited to see it finally happen. I kind of wish, though, that there would have been a different result, because personally, I felt like the first time Cass played, I was not the biggest Cass McQuillan fan. I'm a huge Tony Vlachos fan, so I didn't really enjoy what she was doing. But this time around, I was excited to see what Cass was doing. I liked the Takeo 5 thing that they had started. Now that Cass is out of the game, what do you think that – do you think there's anything that she could have done differently, Kevin, to maybe survive this week and to set herself up to last longer in the game?
Again, she kind of – I mean, she got a little unlucky, but at the same time, we talked about this. We were very impressed with Cass for the first 5 episodes. Emotionally calm, connecting with humans. Last week, you know, she got a little bit of that Chaos Cast going again, where she flipped and saved Spencer. And then this week, yeah, it was not an impressive showing from Cass. I mean, she was surprised by the early mood. She felt that she was in trouble. I felt like she started throwing the Hail Mary a little bit too early. You know, sitting in the sand there with Tasha, physically drawing a line in the sand, standing up, going back, saying bye, bye, bye on in a drastic, I mean, Cass did not do well in that chaotic environment in the first season. She wasn't going to succeed with it here. I was impressed with her the first 5 episodes. And yeah, it kind of just fell off the rails here. She just started throwing the Hail Mary, and Hail Marys don't work that often. You know what I mean? Try to run a couple more plays, get it down the field. She just started bombing it very, very early. Yeah, the physical, I'm going to take my hand and physically create a barrier between me and Tasha, someone who's very aligned well with the majority guys. I mean, that's just not a thing that I can see succeeding in the long run. I'm not going to lie. So Cass really, I thought she was getting a little bit of that winner's edit when she was giving the gift to Kelly Wentworth. She was giving presents to people and stuff. And then it just all fell off a lot quicker than I expected too. It was just like 2 episodes. She's gone. It was unbelievable. I was surprised.
Yeah, what did you think too? In fact, of a line in the sand moment, didn't that scene look a little bit weird? Because Cass like draws this line in the sand, and then all of a sudden, her and Tasha just get up and walk and leave. Like, didn't it kind of seem like that was a little bit staged? Am I crazy?
Again, it kind of was like it was very, very. But again, Cass is a presenter too. She's definitely that she's definitely had moments before that is like, wow, is this a real person? She does give that flair for TV. So, but yeah, that was insane. Especially with someone, I mean, there is some points where you can call people out. You can get into arguments in effective situations. But against Tasha, early in a merge where she's well aligned with the guys, I just did not see that going out over well. You know what I mean? Call a fight with Abby, someone who's not super well aligned. Call her out for some reasons to show your loyalty to other people, but to someone who's so well aligned, it didn't make sense to me. What did they say? They're like, game on. And they stood up, wiped off their pants because they were sitting in the sun, and then they went back to camp, like all Heidi tight. Like, it was hilarious. I watched that scene a couple times. It was just so funny.
Yeah, I didn't really know what was going on there either. I was watching it late at night. I was like, what really happened there? They're dusting their pants off. Anyway, it was very weird. Now, I was on a Robin's podcast this week, and I said that I felt that maybe Cass should have gone to Savage and those guys and tried to throw somebody under the bus, maybe Steven or Spencer, in order to try to get in the good graces of them again and maybe have the attitude of, if you can't beat them, join them. Do you think that is completely crazy? Because I did get a little bit of blowback for that in the comment section. And fair enough, it is a little bit outside the box, but I felt like at least you're trying something there, right? Isn't that more likely to work than the Hail Mary play?
But again, Cass doesn't have that strategy in her toolbox. She does not have that play. She doesn't have the if I can't beat them, join them. She has the if I can't beat them, I'm going to yell at them and call them dumb and get upset at them. You know what I mean? She doesn't have that gear. She's just that's a thing that's missing in her Survivor game, at least what we're getting on the edited show or whatever. I mean, Savage really wanted Sierra, though. He's Sierra, Sierra, Sierra. And the other people just didn't seem like they were just fixated on Cass. So what could Cass have done here? I mean, not much. I mean, she could have tried to throw Sierra under the boat a little bit more. But yeah, I just don't see her connecting with that group at all. So she should have tried. It just wouldn't have worked, in my opinion.
What do you think about Sierra's chances moving forward? You did mention earlier you think she's in trouble. You took her with the second overall pick in the Survivor Happy Hour preseason draft with myself, you, Johnny Calatrulia, and Sarah Hanlon. So what do you think about Sierra? Are you shaking in your boots a little bit here, Kev?
I am terrified. I was super high on Sierra. She was my first overall pick in the draft. She had great promise after her first season. And then, yeah, this episode, again, she came off really, really poorly. She's looked great up to this point. She was kind of invisible the first four episodes, which is fantastic. I'm like, oh, my God, she's going to make it a long way. I'm really loving Sierra. Then last episode, she got involved with the flip against Savage. I'm like, okay. I wasn't super high on that move or whatever. And then this episode, it looked really, really poor. When you're this is just a general rule in reality TV. When you're telling your fellow players you need to start playing the game, it's because you're in a bad position. You know what I mean? If a person like Jeremy, who's in a great position, he's not going to go around and say, guys, let's play the game. Let's play the game. No, because he's in a great position, right? Throwback to Cindy with an S from our season. That was one of her favorite things to say. Guys, let's play the game. Let's play the game. It's because Cindy was never in a good spot and she wanted something to change. You know what I mean? So, just a rule for these reality television shows. If you're telling other people to play, they're going to be like, what do you think I've been doing for 19 days? You're gone. Like, it's just... So Sierra came off really poorly, in my opinion. I mean, but again, she kind of got screwed by the early twist. If their tribe loses again, they vote out Savage, they get another episode, then the merge happens at 12, the merge happens at 11. Sierra might be in one of the best spots. So we can sit here and say that Cass Sierra didn't do super well. But again, I got to give him that extra little piece of doubt saying that production kind of threw them a boomerang. Yeah, but Sierra, I mean, can she rebound here? I don't know. And again, when Joe's sitting there saying it's going to be one of these three girls, you know, it's the next episode. Maybe Sierra can pull out an immunity win. I don't know. And change things up. I hope so. God, I've been high on Sierra this whole season.
Yeah, me too. And it's been tough. And first off, I just want to say, how dare you insult the great Cindy from Big Brother Canada 3. I think that she honestly is one of the greatest players of all time. And that is a big, big, no, you don't insult Cindy, Kevin. She's amazing.
One of the greatest entertainers of all time, not players. I'm sorry.
But she said at the end of the season, she was the best player of the season, Kevin.
Yeah. I had my ears covered at that point. I'm just kidding. Obviously we can throw fun around, but
people in the chat are going crazy. Okay. But let's talk about, I'm with you in the Sierra thing. What do you think that she has to do? If you can quantum leap into Sierra Easton's body, I guess 2 months ago, 3 months ago, whenever Survivor Cambodia was filming, what would you do at this moment? What's your next move? Because now Cass is gone. You have that person who was sort of the big, or people looked at as the toxic person within the tribe, the person who's causing drama. Is there anything that Sierra can do to get out of this spot?
Well, it's very tough, right? And it's very tough because she flipped against Savage last episode. You know what I mean? Savage is a guy who plays this game with his heart. He's not going to forget that. Someone like Spencer or Stephen Fishback would say, oh, I understand why you did that strategically. Let's work together going forward. Savage, no. As Abby Maria says, you F myth, we are dead. It's the very same with Savage. I can see that being under Savage's Twitter bio too. You F with me, you're dead. So yeah, so Sierra is dead to Savage, which is going to be very tough. So what are her options? Win immunity. It's going to be tough. She isn't exactly a beast out there. Find an immunity idol. It's going to be tough. I don't think there's any left out there. So you got to go to the third play. You always got to throw it a third play. I mean, what can she do here? She can go and try to flip it around. I mean, once Sierra's gone, who's the next targets? Spencer and Joe are going to look pretty targetish. So, I mean, Try to go to them now and pitch that now. Guys, I will work with you. I'm a weak player. Go after Spencer. Go after Joe. Keep me around. You can get rid of me at 8. You can get rid of me at 7. But for now, please keep me around. So I think that's the best play. But again, it's not looking good for Sierra. The stock on Sierra has fallen a lot.
What do you think about Abby? Do you think she can maybe try to stir things up with her? Because Abby is somebody who has already rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. We saw confessionals from Tasha earlier in the season. We saw Savage had to deal with her a lot. Abby has been relatively quiet the last 2 weeks. So do you think that she's a ticking time bomb waiting to explode? Or maybe do you think Abby has turned a new leaf?
No, she hasn't turned into a new leaf. anyway, she hasn't turned into a new leaf. But we've had a little bit of purple Abby the last few weeks. I'm a little bit curious. She was a very prominent feature. That's because her tribe was consistently going to tribal counts also. But pre-merge, she was a big feature. She's been a little quiet the last couple weeks. It's going to be tough. I mean, you can throw that in the playbook as well of, hey, let's get Abby to stir up some drama. You never know. But again, we've gotten to the point in an all-star season where people are already looking towards the end. That would be a great play pre-merge, but now people are saying, what? Abby, are you kidding me? That's the girl I want to have beside me. You know what I mean? You're gonna, why would I vote out Abby now? So if this was two tribes still, the chaos, the tribe strength thing, you could still come into play. But I mean, we've gotten into a place where it's just like, no, Abby is very, very valuable because it's just like, it's the GOAT situation again. And so, yeah, I don't see Abby in trouble at all. So you could try that again, but again, it's the odds of that working. Ugh, not very good.
So things are not looking too good for our girl Sierra.
I'm trying. Believe me, if I want to promote Sierra, I love her to death and I just can't. I'm just scraping the bottom of the barrel, but who knows?
Yeah, and I think that she's in a really tough spot. I think that Sierra is somebody who we are both very high on, and I think her equity in any random season will be very high. Mm-hmm. She's an excellent player, but I think anybody in this spot right now is in tough, especially based on what we have, her actions prior to right now in this moment in the game with her, again, doing the, hey guys, time to wake up, play the game. And hey, Savage was lying and saying this, and he wanted to get you and you and you. Well, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's so great. So we'll see what happens to Sierra. I hope she doesn't go home because I really do. I love her a lot. I think she's great television and she's an excellent player. But in the current moment, it's going to be a little bit tough. Let's jump to somebody we've talked a little bit so far in this episode. And that's Spencer, Steven, or called you Steven there. Look at that. I mean, it's just like when we're in the Big Brother Canada house. I'm Rob, you're Steven Fishback. This is amazing. Doing our own know-it-alls. Kevin, what do you think about Spencer's spot right now? He sort of had this, he's got this little thing with Joe going on, the Joga Spencer alliance. Do you think that maybe Joey Amazin and Spencer could form a little twosome and that they could work together and flip-flop between this, we have the Bion crew and the Takeos, or do you think that, no, they're not going to be working together, moving forward?
Interesting question. I'm not sure. I was thinking about that last night. That's what the show is trying to give us, right? They're presenting this little Joe Spencer twosome, and I don't know. Again, we had the hashtag Joe language, which one is the most strange hashtags ever. It was just so random. The whole season, Joe's been the golden boy. He's been the stud. He's doing yoga, and all of a sudden, he kind of came off as like, you know, a little jock, like a little, I don't know what's going on all of a sudden. This is a very strange hashtag for me all of a sudden. But I mean, I think it's great for Spencer. If you can work with Joe, I mean, he's the ultimate meat shield, maybe one of the biggest meat shields in Survivor history. It's just like, if he can really lock in that twosome, who would go for Spencer before Joe, especially now that we're in this merge situation? So that was a concept that was just introduced to us. I think we need one more episode to show us what develops before we can really say, okay, this is going to be a thing. This isn't going to be a thing, but I'm very excited. I mean, I really want Spencer to succeed in this merge. And then that's great news for him if Joe is on his side.
Should Spencer team up with Joe? If you were Spencer, would you do that? Because
yes,
right. And I agree, right? Because let's look at Spencer so far this season. Every single challenge, for the most part, in the pre-merge, whenever there's something where someone needs to step up and be the one person who's the anchor of the challenge, whether it's throwing the balls or putting the puzzle together or anything, it was pretty much Spencer every single time, and he did well most of those times. And then now we see that first challenge after the merge, He comes in second. He looks really good. I feel like if Joe wasn't around, Spencer would be at the forefront of everyone's minds, but for whatever reason, he's not right now. Why do you think it is that people aren't worried about Spencer, Kevin? Because he was in trouble for quite a few weeks in a row there towards the end of the pre-merge, and now it looks like he's in a pretty good spot. So why do you think that people are overlooking Spencer here? Is it because that they're not threatened by his relationships with people, or is it because of Joe? What is it?
Great question, and I'll try to nail it here. This again, there's so many people right now. There's still 13. I don't think there's enough. There's still so much time for. You don't want to worry about one person too much at this point. You know what I mean? If someone was fixated, oh my God, we got to get Spencer out at 13, that's a little aggressive. For the next four or five episodes, I still feel it's like, it's all about me. Let's just get me through. It's the Sandra Diaz twine. I don't care who goes at this moment, as long as I'm still here at Final Eight. Then I'll start targeting someone super specifically. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to go crazy about Spencer at 13, but if he gets down to 7, all right, I'll keep looking out for him. Right now, it's just like, oh, Sierra needs to go? Okay, I'll write her name down. Cass needs to go? Oh, I'll shut up and write her name down. I don't mind. And again, Savage doesn't have that gear either. He's fixated on Sierra at 13 instead of Cass in a decision that I don't think is that big of a deal for him. But he's just like fixated. He's such a jealous, emotional character. He's the opposite of what I look for in a Survivor player. But anyway, so yeah, that is why I think... I mean, the attention on Spencer will heat up in the next couple episodes if he's still around for sure. But if he can nestle under Joe's big golden boy, Joe's wing, hey, Spencer, come here. That would be great for him.
An excellent position, I think, indeed, for Spencer, if that's where he ends up. Now, let's talk about Savage here. Kevin, and I don't know if everybody knows this, but you actually didn't start watching Survivor until Survivor Palau. So everything before 10, you hadn't seen. So people like Jeff Varner, Kimmy Kappenberg, Kelly Wigglesworth, Andrew Savage, you hadn't seen these players play before. So let's talk about a few of those people. First off, Savage. You're not the biggest fan of Savage's. I'm not the biggest fan of Savage, but you can't deny he's actually in a pretty good spot right now. Do you think that it's more so because of luck that he's managed to find himself in this situation? And do you think that his number is going to be coming up pretty quick here?
I don't know if it's coming up quick, but it is luck that he's still there. If the tribe merges at 11 or 12, he's gone almost 100%, right? They turn on Wook to weaken Wavage. They lose another, and their tribe was very weak. They were even going to consider throwing that challenge, intentionally get Savage out. Like, Savage's equity was the lowest. All of a sudden, tribe switch. That's how crazy, and that's how much variance is in these reality TV shows. He went from the bottom to the top, not because anything he did, because of production wanted an early merge. And so, yeah, I think actually Savage could stick around for a while now that he's got this bro thing. But again, his thought process is one I don't identify with. It's this one of emotion. He will never work with Sierra again because of what she did to him. Wherein that is a valuable tool. If you're saying I'm not going to work with one person, there's only 12 people left now. That's like, yeah, I don't know, that's one person. That is one tool you can never use again. That severely limits your options. So again, I never watched Savage in his first season. He got screwed by the Outcast twist or whatever, right? But I imagine he hasn't done anything to his game. And he's just that person. I would love to have Savage on my football team. He was one guy who would live and die for the team. You know what I mean? He was one guy who would just sell his heart on the football field. On Survivor, though, I don't really like him as a player.
Well, yeah, you do want that guy on your football team, right? Because he said he's the antithesis of the wimpy little non-leaders, guys like me. It's interesting with Savage. And there's some people in the chat are saying hashtag weaken Wavage. I guess it's
weaken Wavage.
But yeah, the thing with Savage is, and back to it for, and I'm sure a lot of people probably, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a really hardcore Survivor fan. You've probably seen Survivor Pearl Islands, but for you, Kevin, what basically happened was, yeah, there was the Outcast twist, and Savage felt like he was leading the Morgan tribe, who at the start of the game was a very terrible tribe. They were awful. They lost all the time, but then they started getting a little bit of momentum, and they won a few immunity challenges in a row. Ultimately, the Outcast tribe happens. Some people that got voted out come back into the game, and then those people vote him out at the merge. But I think with him, he's the kind of person who is a little bit delusional. He doesn't really have a lot of self-awareness. And in his mind, he thinks he would have won Survivor Pearl Islands had that not happened. I can tell you for a fact, he would not have won Survivor Pearl Islands if that had not have happened. I feel like that there were much better players that season than him, Johnny Fairplay included. So yeah, Savage is just, I'm not the biggest fan of him either. And that's something that Eliza Orleans and I can agree on. One of very few things I think we can
great
agree on.
Television, though. I mean, you can't have 16 Stephen Fishbacks out there. No, that would be a terrible season. You got to have the Abbey. You got to have the great casting with Savage for sure.
Yeah. And that's what's really good about this season, I think, is that there's lots of different people. And as much as people like you and I were a little disappointed when Keith Nail and Wu got cast on the show, mm-hmm. it's good to have different people on the show, because at the end of the day, the casting is it's like a puzzle. You're putting together a large puzzle, and each of the pieces of the puzzle have to fit together. They've got to relate to each other and whatnot in certain ways, but they're not all the same. They're all different. So that's what Absolutely. I like about it. And speaking of a different person, let's talk about someone else you hadn't really seen a lot before this season, and that's Kimmy Kappenberg. What do you think about Kimmy? She got rid of Monica a few weeks ago. Even though I don't know if that might have been the right move for her, but alas, it happened. She made it work for her. And now I feel like she's in a really good spot, because she's kind of perceived like Abby in that nobody's scared of her, but she's not as explosive as Abby. So what do you think? Have you really liked Kimmy's game so far? And do you think that she's long for this game, Kevin?
Kimmy Kappenberg, she's in a great spot right now. She's in with the majority alliance. She's a weaker physical player. I don't think she's going to be targeted at all for a long time. I'd be shocked if she's not down there in the final six, the final five. Like, if someone's going to flip the alliance, are they going to turn on Kimmy? I don't know. Not really. No. She seems to have really good relationships and stuff. Again, can she win the game? Can she sit at the end and make a case for being the best player of the season? I doubt it. I just can't see these all-stars crowning Kimmy Kappenberger as the representative of their season. You know what I mean? I really feel like she's going to fall in that five to – she might even get second. She might get one vote at the end. But anyway, yeah, I didn't see her the first season. She was very out of control the first season, right? Someone killed a pig or something and she was upset.
Mike Scoopin killed a pig. I haven't seen Survivor Australia since it aired back in 2001 when I was 8 years old, but I believe what happened was there was a pig that Scoopin killed, and I think it was Deb Eaton that was upset about that, and then she got voted out. But for Kimmy, they wanted to kill chickens, I think, and her and Alicia got in a fight, and Alicia Calloway. And again, this is why you need to go back and watch Survivor Australia and Survivor All-Stars, because Alicia Calloway is great. But she just got in her face and she was like wagging her finger in her face. And then Kimmy said, "You don't do that." And then she's like, "I'll wag my finger in my face as long as I want to, Kimmy."
Kimmy has been completely unrememberable for me, though. I mean, she did have a little bit of an awesome episode where she flipped on Monica. But besides that, just again, and when I think of this season, and I write the players down, she's kind of right at the bottom of like, oh yeah, she is on the season. So she's in a great, great spot. But again, I see her taking second. I see her taking third, maybe fourth, fifth too as well. Not first at all.
No, I'm with you on that one. Let's talk
Speaking
about
some old school players.
Yes.
Kelly Wigglesworth. I didn't see her play the first time, and I haven't seen her play this time either. Oh my God. Like it's... I don't know who this person is. I really don't.
Kevin, I like to do impressions, as you know. Do you want to see my Kelly Wigglesworth impression? Okay, that was it, what I just did. That was it. It's nothing. It's like, what? What are you doing? Why are you there, Kelly Wigglesworth? And I'm so, so disappointed, because I thought in the pregame there was talk, and I talked about this with Andy a few weeks ago, but I said, I thought that, okay, look, here's Kelly Wigglesworth. This is going to be great. She's back on the show. She's in a pregame interview saying that she doesn't know anything of what she's doing. She doesn't want to make alliances, anything like that. And she's just going to go and try to play the game like she did the first time. And I thought, that's just her, just saying stuff. She's blowing smoke. She's trying to get them off the scent, because she knows all of the other players are going to listen to this. But in reality, that's what's happening, Kevin. She's doing nothing. So,
yeah, absolute non-entity.
Do you think that – if you were in the game and then there was this huge wild card, this person who is not even really playing, what do you do with a person like that? Do you take that person out, or do you just keep them around because they're a non-threat? Because someone like Abby Maria, it's a little different because she's so explosive. She's so emotional. She's vindictive. But Kelly Wigglesworth isn't any of those things. She seems like a very nice lady. I think that she's quite pleasant, probably in person. She's a hard worker. People like being around her. But you're not able to read what's going on in her mind, because it doesn't appear as if she's thinking about the game. So what would you do if you are one of those people out there right now? Would you want to work with her or take her out?
In Big Brother terminology, Kelly Wigglesworth is the ultimate floater. The ultimate floater. Like, we haven't seen a floater like this in Survivor in a while, actually, in my recent memory. I mean, how many confessionals has she had this season?
Like two, maybe?
Two. And both of them were relating to a merge feast and like creating a shelter in the first episode, right?
Yeah. So, and just for those of you who are keeping track at home, Andrew Savage, I believe, had 11 confessionals in this past episode, not the whole season, this past episode.
it's insane. So yeah, I mean, let's put her shoes in Jeremy's spot or a big player spot. It's tough. You know what I mean? Cause a floater, they're going to have a vote down the line. They're going to have a jury vote. You really have to look into this person and say, what is my relationship with Kelly Wigglesworth? Will I get her jury vote? And floaters are extremely, extremely dangerous. And we talked about this all the time in Big Brother. If you don't target the floaters, obviously often the floaters can become your demise. You know what I mean? You undervalue them. I hope we get a strong episode here from Wigglesworth coming up soon. But yeah, she's in a great spot. Again, she's with that majority alliance. She's good in with Savage. She's been with Savage. She's never betrayed Savage. She's in with that group. Again, I see her very similar to Kimmy. She's going to make it down to that six, that five spot. But again, I can't see. I mean, could she get some votes at the end? Could there be this nostalgia factor of Wigglesworth getting second? Remember back in the Borneo, Survivor was the biggest show on television. The finale was viewed by almost 50 million people. And this girl got second. And a lot of the current Survivor players watched that and felt that nostalgia. Could she get a sympathy, kind of a legend vote at the end? Yeah, based on the editing, though, again, I think she has almost a 0% chance to win, because how could this girl be the winner of the season when she's had almost no airtime? It doesn't make sense.
I feel like we would get some edit. Maybe not a winner's edit, but some edit. And there's people who point to the fact that, oh, well, you know, the winner's edit doesn't always happen for people. Look, Natalie White won Survivor Samoa. Fabio won Survivor Nicaragua. But those people were on the show. Mm-hmm. I don't see Kelly Wigglesworth on the show for the most part. So I really don't. I'm not in the mindset that she could win. But yeah, it's an interesting thing that you bring up, is this idea, this nostalgia, this respect that people have for Kelly Wigglesworth, because she finished second on the show in the very first season. Stephen Fishback this week in one of his secret scenes said that he doesn't think he could beat Kelly Wigglesworth in the final three in a scenario like that, which really interested me. But let's talk about Steven for a little bit here, because I'm sure you probably disagree with that. I disagree with that. But what do you think about Steven's game right now, where he's at? What do you think Steven's going to have to do in order to win this game?
He's going to have to really dig into his poetry library and keep those poems coming, I guess. No, we're just kidding. What a weird episode. What a weird scene that was. In a merge episode with 13 people, why would you feature this poem that had nothing to do with anything? Why not get an extra confessional from a valuable player, like an extra Tasha confessional? I was just shaking my head. I mean,
did you catch the name of the poet as well, Kevin?
No, I don't know what it was about.
It was Gerard Manley Hopkins. That is the guy's name. Like, what kind of – that is the great – first off, that – I want to change my name to that. Maybe if Godfrey goes into acting, I can convince him to change his name to that, because I feel like that would be a really good actor's name of this movie. I don't know what it would be, but Gerard Manley Hopkins. Anyway, yeah, fish back out of water once again, as Stephen once said early on. It did not make any sense. So clearly, I think, and I thought a lot about this, and Rob asked me about this, and I think that we're just seeing – that was in there to show us why Steven is different from everyone else, because clearly he is. He's got some similarities with Spencer. He's got some things in common with a few people. But for the most part, Steven Fishback is different than everybody else out there. I'm sure I would be different than everyone else out there if I was there. But alas, he's different. So what's he going to have to do, Kevin? He's going to have to make some – other than the poetry, what do you want to see from Steven? And what do you think the narrative is at the end of the season – in which Steven, if we walk away in December as Steven is with the winner of this season, what are we going to see?
he's up there in terms of the top three people I could see winning this game. I mean, he had this amazing emotional confessional last episode where he's crying, talking about how he has regrets from his first season. I mean, that is isn't that the definition of a winner's edit? It was unbelievable. I think Steven's equity in the season is extremely high. He started the season with the Dodo edit, the I'm lost, these guys are going to vote me out. He's transformed into this emotional character that's connecting with people, as well as keeping his wits about him. And he switched on Monica. He flipped on Monica. Now he's perfectly aligned at the merge. I believe Steven could truly be on his way to winning the game. Like, by the way, with that poem episode, what I pictured during the episode is like production just like, all right, guys, that's a wrap. We have the episode. And then like, oh shit, we only have 41 minutes. Oh no, God. Oh my God. We need another minute of content. Oh, remember Steven said the poem? Let's put that in. That's how I pictured production editing that episode. Oh yeah. Oh my God. We need 45 more seconds. Anyway, yeah, I'm very high on Steven now. I didn't think he was going to do well in this game at all. I wasn't going to pick him for the draft. I wasn't going to take him in any of the couple first rounds in the draft. And now he's in this amazing spot where I could really see Jeff being like the winner of Survivor Second Chances, Steven Fishback. He's going to run in the crowd, hug his family. They're all going to cry. I can see that happening. I can picture that moment where I couldn't picture that moment for a lot of other people. So what are your thoughts on Steven?
Yeah, I think that was a really good look for Steven. And early on, I remember in our group chat with me, you, Johnny, and Sarah, we were making fun of Sarah Hanlon for taking Steven first overall based on that first episode. But it really has turned around for him. I'm just concerned with Steven with the number of big threats that are left in the game. There are a lot of really strong personalities, players, strategists that are left in this game. And I don't know how Steven would fare against some of them in a final three scenario because he's aligned with a lot of them. And because he's aligned with those people, I feel like he's going to have a tough time arguing his case to win, similarly to when he was in Survivor Token Chains, when he went up against JT. While him and JT had all of the exact same moves, Steven was the strategist behind a lot of those moves, but JT was perceived as the leader. If Steven ends up in a situation where he's in a final three with, I don't know, if Savage is there, I don't think Savage would be there because Steven's scared of him and Savage isn't the biggest fan of Steven, but you never know. If Savage is there, if Jeremy is there, if Tasha is there, if Spencer is there, if Joe is there, I feel like all of them would probably beat Steven. Do you not disagree?
No, I agree, but isn't there a different flavor to the jury in an all-star season? Isn't there a bit of a different mindset? I don't know. Again, a heroes versus villains. We didn't have the strongest jury with the vote against Russell. You're right. You are making some good points. I just don't want to believe it. I really want to believe that Steven could beat these guys, but you might be right. You're right. If that strong male, if a Jeremy makes it to the final, it's hard not to vote for him. It really is tough.
Right. Because when have we seen a strong male leader or a strong female leader like Tasha get to the final three and lose? It's pretty rare.
Season 7 All-Stars, Rob lost
because he screwed over a lot of people, so that's fair.
But the game has evolved, you're right.
Right? I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Tom Westman, JT, Earl in Fiji. That's just off the top of my head. Those are the people that I think of. Mike Holloway. These types of guys, when they get to the end, the jury tends to respect those people. I think that those are the people that people think, wow, this person is amazing. They had such a huge target on their back. They led their tribe. They led their alliance. I have to vote for them because their game is so overt. You can see everything that they're doing. Whereas someone like Steven is a little more behind the scenes, and maybe not everybody is going to see what he's pulling off. I think Steven can do it. I really do think he can. But right now, if it just happens to be a pagonging and Steven just rolls with that Bion crew, I don't think he could beat them. I think he's going to have to flip on some of them at some point and take one of them out to really stand out, show that he's a huge player, face a little bit of adversity, and then have a case to argue for the win at the end of the game. Are you in the same boat with that one?
I agree. He's gonna have to stab some. He can't imagine little Steven, and if it's a final three, imagine little Steven behind Jeremy and Joe. Just guys, I played strong. Joe and Joe. Yeah, you're right. I believe he could make some moves down the end to get it done though. I really have faith. Oh, I love watching Steven on Survivor. God, it's so good.
Me too. Steven Fishback's amazing. And I remember, I will never forget the feeling that you and I had when Ian Terry accidentally slipped to us that Steven Fishback might be back on our television screen sooner rather than later.
We flipped out.
When we were in the Big Brother jury house. That was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about just the game as a whole right now, Kevin. Let's talk about, and we mentioned these strong guys in the game. Of these strong guys, these strong personalities over with the Bion crew, who is really standing out to you as the person that is in the best position to win at this point?
So when I look at the 12 survivors left, I think of them, I think of three people as really the strong alpha males. You got Savage, you got Joe, and you got Jeremy. Those guys are physically intimidating. They have leader qualities. And of those three, I think Jeremy is in the best spot of those three. Savage just doesn't really have the strategical self-awareness. Joe doesn't either with the hashtag Joe language. But Jeremy truly does. He does have a perception that people wouldn't expect from such a strong, intimidating player. So I really believe of those three, Jeremy has the most perception. And you can see that. You can see that in the episode. People like Steven want to get rid of Joe a couple episodes ago, and Jeremy's like, no, calm down, knowing that Joe would be his meat shield. He's very perceptive of the game. He's good with relationships. I believe that Jeremy is, of the alpha male group, I think Jeremy is the best.
What about Tasha? Do you think that Tasha is in an even better spot than Jeremy now that she survived this week? Because she's shown a lot of strategic chops so far this season, and she's done a pretty damn good job herself.
There's still a lot of people. I mean, there's still so many people left we haven't even talked to. We haven't talked about Tasha. We haven't talked about Wentworth. Oh, my God. I love Wentworth. Anyway, we'll talk about Tasha first. I've been guessing on Tasha. I feel very uncertain. Tasha is a big question mark for me at this point. I know you strongly feel certain ways about Tasha. Maybe you could take that one.
Yeah, I think that she's played a phenomenal game. I think she's doing a really good job. I think that, I mean, we saw that when with the whole Angkor and Jeff Varner thing, when her and Savage, they were at a disadvantage and she managed to flip everything on its head and turn that into an advantage for her. And she was controlling the vote rather than the former Takeos. So I think that she's done a great job. She managed to get out of this situation. She's a little bit brash. I think that she's a little bit abrasive at times. And I think that that kind of hurts her a little bit. And you can hear that in her interview or in Cass's interview with Rob this week. You can hear that when Trish talked to Rob this week. Those are people that played with Tasha. I know Tony Vlachos is not the biggest Tasha fan. So she does rub certain people the wrong way. But the people that like Tasha really seem to enjoy Tasha quite a bit. And they do enjoy her. And I think that she is another person who set up really well. And the thing that's different with her than those alpha males is that she's not perceived as one of those alpha males. She's not perceived as...
She is, though. No, Tasha is perceived as an alpha character.
But she's not in the same way that... she's not as perceived as threatening as Joe and Savage and... Well, maybe Jeremy is, but I don't... Is she really at the forefront of people's minds?
I think she is, right? She's consistently shown an ability to do well in these challenges, and she does give off that perception, that brash personality. So when you think of the best female competitors, she's number one. You know what I mean? When you look at the strength that these women have on this left in this game, I mean, Wigglesworth is pretty strong as well, but Tasha has a history of doing well in challenges, and she's continuing to do that this year. So I think, I mean, she's not like, I would label her as alpha though, too, as well.
I would too. I just think that because of how this is set up and because it's all these bros, I just think that maybe she's not as far up on the pecking order as normally she would normally. But yeah, I'm excited to see what Tasha's going to do. I think that she, if she does get into trouble, I'm excited to see it because she's managed to get herself out of a very sticky situation, as Baylor Wilson would say at the start of this game. And I think that she can do it again. And I've enjoyed watching her growth as a survivor player on her second go round. It's been really fun watching a lot of these people improve. Mm-hmm. And I think that Tasha is one of those people who did a really good job the first time, ended up in a bad spot, but then ultimately lost the game because of it. But now this time She kind of had her neck on the line this week, but managed to get out of it once again. And it'll be fun to see with her. Another person that you just mentioned that we both love that has shown a huge improvement is Kelly Wentworth. What do you think is next for Kelly Wentworth here? Because she was more so on the Takeo side of things. She was with that Takeo 5 that Joe formed with, and Cass and Sierra and Keith formed over at the new Takeo 2.0. Now she was with Cass, but then at the last minute decided, okay, I'm going to go with the majority and vote against Cass. So she's kind of on the outs. She's on the fringe. She's not really on the inside of the Bion crew, but she seems to be somebody that people would want to work with. So what do you think is next for Kelly Wentworth?
God, I'm obsessed with Wentworth. I really am. She favorited my tweet the other day, and I had a little bit of a fanboy moment. Like, oh my God. It's like, should I direct message her? No, I couldn't do it. I was too worried.
Does she follow you on Twitter?
She tagged me. I don't think she follows me.
She doesn't follow me either.
I can only dream.
That's when I will pass out, Kevin. She reached anyway, me once. But anyway, let's continue.
She's super perceptive. She's an amazing – what have we gone through? We've gone through a tribe swap. We've gone from two tribes to three tribes and then back to two tribes. We've had three iterations, now the merge. We've had four combinations of different alignments. And where has she been in trouble? Never really. Joe was going to bat for her a couple episodes ago. People want to work with her. And another unreported issue, she has the immunity idol. She has the immunity idol. God, immunity idols have barely been in play this season. Very shocking. Usually they're at the forefront of who has them. What are we going to do with them? And no, Kelly got that idol back way on the first episode. It hasn't been mentioned since. It's this amazing tool in her back pocket. She's not in danger right now. It's going to be Sierra ahead of her, even though she is slightly on the outs. And after Sierra goes and maybe someone else goes, are people really going to look at this blondie as a huge threat to win this game? Someone that was basically non-existent in their first season? No, she's dominating. And that's why I was so high on her before the season started. A lot of these players have history, right? Spencer Bledsoe, the scary, scary player. Savage, this beast, Jeremy Collins. These guys have history. Kelly Wentworth had no history coming into this game, and she's used that to her full advantage. Man, I'm obsessed with how well she's doing.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited for Kelly Wentworth because she's great. She's been so awesome with the fans post-show. I've loved hearing her in all of her interviews, and I figured, you know what, if she were to go back, I think she would do very well. And sure enough, she's living up to that potential. She's doing a great job without her father at FarmGuy69 on Twitter, the great Dale Wentworth. I don't know what do you think is next for her though? Do you think that she's okay for a couple of votes because she's not inside the core of the Power Alliance right now? So when do you think that things are going to start swinging back they're going to start swinging back upwards for her? Because right now it's not bad, but it's not really good either.
I mean, it's lukewarm, and which is good enough. And when you add the immunity idol in, I think you can take it from lukewarm to good. You know what I mean? Sarah's still at the focal point, even if she's not on the ins. Like, I think she can get by a couple of votes, maybe two votes without using that idol. And Kelly is perceptive enough to know when she has to play the idol. The idol is a tool, right? It's only as good as the person using it, right? If you got like a random crazy, if Abby had the idol, that thing's worthless. You know what I mean? Like, she won't be able to use that thing. She'd be unperceptive. She'd be unable to use it to build relationships. Kelly has those skills. So an idol to Kelly is very, very different than an idol to someone than like Abby all of a sudden. So I believe that there's going to be a great episode coming up where that comes into play. And I'm very excited to see how she wields it. I love when the idol gets in the hands of a player that can either use it or at least try to use it effectively. It creates, remember Joel last season with the fake idol? Great television. Someone who's like, anyway, I think she's fine.
And speaking of Joe with the fake idol, I think that something that came up in the preseason of the show was that Jeff Probst said that the immunity idols this season would look different from one another. They would be, some would look like they're very well put together, that they're very professional, like your normal hidden immunity idol, and others would look as if a three-year-old child put it together. So right now, we haven't seen any signs of that. It looked like Jeremy's, I think, was like a little circle or something, and same with Kelly Wentworth's. So to me, that says that there has to be another hidden immunity idol inserted into the game at some point. Do you think that I'm reading into this a little bit too much, or do you think that we're going to see that merge immunity idol come out to play sometime soon?
Well, there's two out right now, right? Kelly Wentworth has one, and Jeremy Collins has one, and they've had him in their possession for a long time. And until one gets played, or they're really going to introduce a third one, what are the rules? What are the production rules on these immunity idols? Is there a rule book back in Productions 10? I don't think so. I think they manipulate that rule book as long as they want drama to come into play. So if, like, oh my God, if they, like, oh my God, let's give Sierra an immunity, I'm just kidding. They would never necessarily do that. Again, I would love to see the rule book on these immunity idols. Going back, I mean, this is a throwback, but I remember tweeting back out during Blood versus Water 1. Do you remember when Tyson found an idol? Do you remember the location? It was way up in a tree.
Yeah.
A place that was so far up. I believe if you walked Sierra to that tree in that season and said, there's the idol, go get it, she would be unable to physically go grab it. True. It would require so much athleticism to climb up that tree and grab it. And then there was one with Rob's idol and Redemption Idol, I believe, and it was a very high located place. One that, I don't know, man, where are these people hiding these idols? I truly believe there's a little bit of production manipulation, but God, it's so interesting, man.
No, man. Russell Hans found all those immunity idols, baby. I'm the greatest of all time. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting with the immunity idols. Back to what you're saying, what's the rules with this? Well, there is no rules. Production decides what they want to do. But just thinking back a little bit on Survivor Kagiyan, so that season, there were immunity idols at all three camps because they started with three tribes. Worlds Apart, I binged that season, so did you. So I'm trying to think. That season, I feel like that there were immunity idols at all three tribes. So I feel like there would have been an immunity idol at Angkor at some point. It just didn't get found. So I think if they're not at that camp anymore, they would put that somewhere in this new Orkin tribe's beach somewhere. We haven't seen any footage of it because maybe – for whatever reason, they're not finding it. It's very high up in a tree like it was for Tyson that one time. So maybe Joey and Mazin can get it. One of those guys can get it. Who knows what the thinking is behind that. But, yeah, I'm intrigued. I don't know what's going to go on. But
just a random thought. Would you ever like a fake immunity idol introduced by not a player but by production? You know what I mean? Like a Survivor auction, you buy a clue, you go find this idol, and it's actually fake, placed there by production just to give – oh, that would just destroy somebody.
That was something that I believe was brought up on the Survivor Think Tank 2 with Rob Cesternino and Stephen Fishback. If you bought the 48 Laws of Survivor, you got access to that podcast. But I believe that idea was submitted by Colin Stone, the great Colin Stone of the Dom and Colin podcast. Definitely check it out. But, yeah, he said the twist is – there's an immunity idol, but it does nothing. And I think that just that you have it, you can say, hey, look, here's an idol. I have this thing, but it doesn't actually do anything. I think that would be a really cool thing. I think that would be a fun idea. Mm-hmm. I think that it would scare people, but the fact that it couldn't actually do anything would be a little bit interesting. I think that would be fun.
It's so cool. Cool idea.
Yeah. So we'll see. Maybe someday we'll see that come to fruition. I know that also, I think it was during that podcast as well, there was the idea of, hey, we should start a season with two tribes, split it into three, and then go back to two. Maybe that might have been in the first Survivor Think Tank. I can't remember. I've listened to so much.
That's what happened this year.
But that's what happened this year. So ultimately, it came true. So maybe someday we will see that indeed. But let's get into some of your questions, guys. It's Kevin and I have been going for a little bit
of an hour
here. We could go forever, but let's take some of your questions. I'm interested to hear from you guys. So if you want to jump on, we've got 93 people here in the chat watching us live. So if you want to come on camera, we would love to talk to you and hear your questions about the episode. If not, you can also leave a text question. Just type in /Q in the chat and type in your question after that. Okay, here's one from Libanstar1. And Libanstar1 says, who do you think is playing the best game right now? So, Kevin, who do you think is playing the best game? And while you answer that, we're going to add somebody onto the call. So, who do you think is playing the best game right now?
Who do you think is playing the best overall game? Oh, there's so many. I gotta say my girl Kelly, the Blondie, is playing the best overall game from the start to the finish. Does she have the highest chance to win the season? No, but with her capabilities coming in, she has played the best from the start to our current point. I think Kelly has played the best. What about you?
I think it's hard. I think that right now I would go with Jeremy, but let's introduce our person who's another person that's come on to the podcast. He's well known probably. Well, I'm sure he is by everybody who's listening to this. It's the great Taryn Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen. Taryn, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you, Jordan, and Kevin. It's very nice to meet you. I was a
Taryn,
huge fan.
Man. Oh, really? Thank you very much, Taryn. It's awesome. Nice to meet you. I've listened to a lot of your past Big Brother podcasts, and I think you are one of the we look at the game very similarly.
Awesome.
So, Taryn, I know you're a huge Kevin fan, so I'm glad that you hopped on for this one. So who do you think is playing the best game right now?
I think it's between Jeremy and – well, I think Jeremy's probably playing the best game that we're seeing. I think – I do think Kelly Wentworth was playing very well, but she hasn't had the best luck as far as how challenges are breaking out and how the swaps are doing. But she's managed to survive, and she's still in a good position. And I do think the fact that she has her idol is going to be very crucial, hopefully. I feel like edit-wise, she's still – I had her pegged as the winner from episode one, and I'm still kind of sticking to that. But I do think what we've seen from Jeremy is really good. And what we've seen from Steven so far has been pretty good. I mean, he managed to ingratiate himself with a tribe that he didn't fit in with when he first got on that beach. I'm afraid that he's going to kind of play himself out of the game because he's too worried about who he's going to get to the end with. So that's what I'm worried about a little.
Oh, and for those of you who are listening to this in the audio archives, Taryn just got mauled by his cat. Taryn, what's your cat's name?
Kellis. It's a character from a book, fantasy book.
Oh, yeah. Wow. There you go. How old's your cat? Is it a young cat, an old cat?
Very young kitten.
Very young kitten. Okay, that's awesome. Oh, he's very cute. My cat is over sleeping on the bed over here, and he's passed out. He's very old. He's 16. So he doesn't mind that I'm podcasting and interrupting his nap. But let's take another question, guys. Here's one from Kyle G. Seraphim. And he says, how do you think Survivor will handle double eliminations since we started with 20 castaways this season? Will we see a triple elimination and will you be interested in that? Kevin, what do you think about that idea of having – do you think we're going to have – because – right now, there are 12 people left. Today, it is November 7th. So next week, it will be the 11th when Survivor's on. So the 11th. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 episodes, I believe, left, including the – so the 16th is when I believe the finale is. So we have 6 episodes left, and we have 12 people left in the game. So how do you think they're going to handle this?
Triple evictions, baby. No, I'm just kidding.
You love those triples.
Oh, God. And an underreported story is, well, Terry Dietz left a little while ago, right? And just to throw a quick side note on that is, like, I mean, my heart went out to him. It was a truly emotional episode. Oh, my God. Like, I can't believe, as someone who's played a reality television show, if my second chance had to leave on something non-game related, of course I would respond to a family emergency without question. But I can't believe the what-ifs in his heart going on right now. Like, it would just be devastating. It would be absolutely devastating. But anyway, so my heart goes out to Terry. So yeah, I mean, production really uses the double elimination in Survivor as a to speed up what is the inevitable, right? If it's going to be a Sierra, someone else boot, I really feel like a double elimination might not happen next episode, just because you don't want a truly predictable episode, right? And so I think that's my thoughts. But as a historian of Survivor, you might have a little bit more knowledge on the double elimination episodes. I just remember them in the past. It would be like, oh, these two people are going to go back to back. Let's put in a double elimination here and just speed up the process, right?
Yeah, and I am no Survivor historian. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the show, but we'll leave that title to Mike Bloom, Mario Lanza, and Jay Fisher, and Paul Osselson. But I would say that, yeah, that's probably how they'll use it. So right now it looks like in the chat is saying that we need 7 people voted out in 5 episodes before the finale, because we'll end up with probably 5 at the end of the season, assuming it's a final 3. So yeah, we'll probably have 2 double elimination episodes, which is great. It should be really interesting to see that play out. But yeah, that's how I think that they will use it. The one season that comes to mind with me, really, where they used those double eliminations well was during Survivor South Pacific. And that was after Cochran flipped at that first merge episode. And after that, they kind of, because Keith went out that episode, but then I think Ozzy and Jim went right after that in the next episode. So that kind of sped things up. And I think maybe, I'm not quite sure, maybe Whitney and Dawn were just right after that in another double elimination episode. Not 100% sure on that. I haven't seen South Pacific in a while. But from what I recall, that was a really good way to speed things up. And I think that, yeah, that's how they'll probably use it this season. And it'll be fun to watch. I'm excited to see that play out speed it up, because that way that'll kind of play defense a little bit against a potential Pagani, or at least a few predictable weeks in a row. And we can kind of get to the final seven or final eight part of the game a little bit faster than we would normally want to, because I think that is when the game is really going to pick up. One thing I wanted to ask you, Kevin, and Taryn, I'll get you to jump in on this as well, is what do you think about the jury now? We're going to have a jury of 10, it looks like. Do you think that that means it is a final two, or do you think it's going to be a final three and we're going to go with that scenario that I just set up?
It's really strange. It's either going to be a final two or another twist. Maybe they'll pull a playbook from Big Brother Canada season 3 and someone gets voted out of the jury, as I'm talking to the one person in the history of Big Brother who has ever been voted out of the jury. You will have that title forever, Jordan.
I was going to say, this is exactly how we felt watching Big Brother Canada 3. Like, you guys are experiencing it now. Like, what is with this? This is a weird number for a jury. Something weird has to happen here.
Yeah, it's not only huge, but it's an even number. Like, there's just two very strange things with that. What are your takes on that, Taryn?
The only thing I can think of is just they thought, you know, the audience voted these people in, so let's get as many as we can to all the way through the season. And so they were like, we merged at 13 and we're going to take 10 people. So if the merge boot is somebody that's really popular, we're going to be able to keep them in the show and people are going to be satisfied of, you know, seeing whoever it is. So, I mean, we're going to get casts all the way through the season now. And I'm sure a lot of people are happy about that. So that's probably what I'm thinking. And they'll probably still go with a final three. A jury of 11 with a final two just seems, I don't know. I don't think so. That seems crazy.
That seems crazy, but crazier things have happened. Who knows? Yeah, maybe we'll see my Survivor long-lost cousin, Spencer Bledsoe, the Charlie Brown of Survivor. Maybe he will get voted out of the jury just like I got voted out of the Survivor jury. And then we'll just have one more thing in common with one another. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. And I was saying on the voicemails this week with Rob, I think that they kind of want to see a tie. I think that's maybe what the producers kind of want to see. It would be exciting to see, ooh, a tie on finale night. This would be great. And even then, it's unlikely with the 10 people on the jury, 3 people in the final three. It's probably going to be, I don't know. It's not going to be 4-3. I guess it could be. It could be 4-3-3. That would be kind of cool, I think. So, yeah, I'm not really sure where they were going with that. But we're going to roll with it and see what happens.
Yeah.
Now let's see if there are any other questions. It looks like people are slacking on the questions today, which is unfortunate, but it is what it is. If you guys want to hop on, we've got another seat here. It's open. I know there were some people earlier in the show that wanted to jump on, so you're more than welcome to join us if you would like to. I'm going to quickly take a look at the patron group of robaswebsite.com and take a question from there. If you want to become a patron of Rob Has a Podcast and learn more about that, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/patron and find out how to do that and all the benefits of doing so. I've got one here from Matt Ligori, Kevin. It's more of a statement, and he just says, I'm ready to fight Kevin over Sierra and Kelly Wentworth. They're my favorites, and he can't have them.
Oh, God, I love them. In terms of Survivor players, they're – oh, man, I hope I meet them at Reality Rally, too. I just love them to death.
Yeah, they're great. They're great people, and I'm excited to see what's next. Oh, Shaylin, hop on. Yeah, Shaylin in the chat saying she wants to hop on. Shaylin, please join us. We want to speak to some more people. We want to get your questions. Talk to us. Let's take another one here. This one's from Edward Morris in the Rob Has a Podcast Patreon group, and he says, hey, two of my favorites from Big Bro Chacho Canada 3. Should Joe have let Spencer win immunity at the last immunity challenge? What do you guys think about that, Kevin?
Yeah, Why is he up there that long, in my opinion? And it was, he's safe, especially when he's pointing at the three people in front. People know it's either going to be Sierra, Tasha, or Cass. Why is he sitting up there and just once again displaying his hand-eye coordination? I just don't think he can help himself. As shown in the early part of the seasons, Joey Mazin's making hammocks. He's out there fishing. Play down your physical strength. Like right now, there's 10 more immunity, or there's 9 more immunity challenges to go. 10 at the start of this episode. So unless he's going to go 10 for 10, yeah, there's no point in him hanging up there. I was, oh God, the ball slipped. Jeff. Joe is out of the challenge. Sit down, cry about it, and you're safe. Throw it. I'm a huge proponent of throwing challenges. A very unreported thing in Survivor is throwing challenges. I think a lot of tribes do it. I think a lot of people do it in the individual portions, and they never like giving confessionals about, oh, I threw this challenge. They never really. Big Brother is a huge staple. Survivor is not a big reported thing. And so, yeah, Joey Amazing, you need to. If I was Joey Amazing, I knew I was going back on to Survivor, I would pound chocolate bars for the month before. Get rid of that six pack and then go back out there. Anyway, would you have won that if you were Joe? I just didn't see a point.
Yeah, and I talked about this with Rob, and I said that I didn't think it was a good idea at all to do that because you're safe. You're in a good spot. I understand why Joe wouldn't do that because Joe is just that kind of guy. He's always going to try and win challenges in that spot, but it's unrealistic to win 10 immunities in a row. Nobody's going to pull that off. That's just improbable.
But it just doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't make sense to me, Joe. Come on, Joe. Like, you're going to win all sorts of puzzle challenges. You're going to win all sorts of swimming challenges. You're going to win run up the rope. And now you're winning hand-eye coordination challenges as well. It's just like, God, you know what I mean? He's truly going again. He's Hercules out there. You know what I mean? Just play down your physical capabilities. At least it was frustrating. I wanted, when Joe came into the season, I wanted to see the evolution of he's it's the same thing. It's like we're taking Joe 1.0, putting him into 2.0, and he hasn't changed at all. And I'm a little disappointed he hasn't evolved as a player. But Taryn, what are your thoughts on that? I've talked about it. I could go on for Joe rants forever.
Do I sound any better?
You sound great.
Yes.
Okay. I think you're right on the money. I think the way he probably feels about it is people know I'm a threat. I might as well just try to win. But people knew Malcolm was a threat, but Malcolm was terrible at hand-eye coordination. He totally blew it when he came down to that, what was it, Final Four immunity challenge? This is the perfect immunity challenge to say, here's a weakness of mine that is not obvious when you look at me. I'm terrible at balancing and I don't have good hand-eye coordination. So the fact that he's so good at everything and people know it, and then he wins this one, which is not an obvious skill to have, people are going to be like, well, what can we beat you at? Because it doesn't look like we can do it at anything. So we need to take you out as soon as we get the chance.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what I think everybody's thinking that right now. And I, poor Joe.
Yeah,
poor Joe.
When he wins 10 immunity challenges in a row, we're all going to be eating crow.
Yes,
but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's just, yeah, no. I mean, if anyone's going to do it, it's Joe. It's Joey Mazin. But
think about it this way, man. Let's say he's a 70% chance to win every episode. Let's say he's out of every single competition, he's going to win it 70% of the time. Go 0.7 to the iteration of to the power 10. Like, it's just never going to happen. It's a mathematically, astronomically impossible that he can win every single challenge. He's going to fail one time and then he's gone. Just from a pure math perspective, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, not to mention all of the other great competitors we have on this season with Tasha, Spencer, just Jeremy. Like, he has so much competition to begin with that I don't even think he's a 70% chance to win each competition. So,
yeah, exactly. Unless he gets rid of, unless he would have jumped with Cass and with Sierra and with Kelly Wentworth and with Abby, and he would have gone after Savage this past week, and then he would have started picking off all of those big threats. If that is your plan then to win every single immunity, then at least he has a chance of pulling it off somewhat. It's still highly improbable. I don't really see how he could do it, but he'd have a much better chance of doing it if his competition is Cass, Sierra, Abby, Kimmy Kappenberg, and Stephen Fishback, right? I mean, then you can buy the narrative a little bit more, but not against Jeremy, not against Savage, not against Spencer and Tasha, no.
For future challenge competitors that go on Survivor, if you're down to a point where you feel like you have to win out, it's only going to be from, you know, 4 challenges on. Nobody's ever won more than 5 in a row, right?
No, I don't believe so.
So, I mean, don't even try, you know, you vote out the people you think you can, you can't beat, I guess, and look for idols because that's the only way you're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's take another question. This one's from UConn RR, and UConn RR says, question, do you think Savage will go on a witch hunt to find who voted for him, a la Rupert in Survivor Pearl Islands?
Who voted for me?
Or Lex in Survivor Africa. But yeah, Kevin, what do you think about that? Do you think that...
Yeah, Savage will... every time Savage sees his name down, he's unable to think about why someone would do it instead of he's going to respond emotionally and go crazy.
I just
crazy.
Can't believe they did that. I just... What? Oh, I can't believe it.
What, by the way, I didn't really understand what happened with that vote. It was Sierra that voted for Savage, right?
Yes.
It was kind of like she knew that Spencer wasn't going to flip, that it was going to be Cass. Was it a total like FU Savage kind of vote?
Yeah, she said on Twitter that her reasoning behind it was she felt like she didn't want to burn bridges with Tasha and she wanted to be able to say, hey, look, Tasha, I didn't vote for you. I'm open to working with you. So she voted for Savage instead as a result of that. I think part of it though too definitely had to just be a classic FU Andrew Savage type of moment.
Yeah.
I don't think she intended it this way, but I actually kind of liked it because if people think she's really hung up on Savage but nobody else, then maybe she comes off as Savage's problem but not anyone else's problem, so they might go after somebody a little more threatening, like maybe Spencer or even Kelly.
Yeah, and it could maybe, but I mean, even if it buys you three more days, it bought her three more days.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
and I just don't see Savage as being somebody that is going to be able to lead a charge against her. If anything, Savage being against her might help her because it's like, oh well, Savage is against her, but we have better things to do than do Savage's dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay, here's another one from the franchise at LibAndStar1, and the franchise wants to know, their logo is there's a little Toronto Raptors logo in the corner there, Kev. I don't know if you can see that, but they want to know thoughts on Keith Nail so far. Karen, thoughts on Keith Nail?
I think Keith Nail is exactly what he was in his last season. We're just getting a slightly different edit. I don't really know why. I mean, people really liked seeing Keith's antics, and I think we've kind of seen him in the background occasionally, and people have really enjoyed it. Like, he was practicing a golf swing at one point. People loved that. I never actually saw the scene, but I saw people talking about it. I think on the Survivor Reddit, they were saying like, oh yeah, Keith was in the background practicing a golf swing while people were being upset about something in the foreground.
That's amazing.
And that is like the most Nail thing that has ever happened. Like, there's this conflict going on. Keith's like, hey, I'm just going to practice my golf swing. All right. Four. Oh, man. Keith Nail.
I guess they just don't feel like they need him, his like antics to make the show work. But I don't know. Every once in a while, I feel like throw it in there for the Keith fans. He must have gotten a lot of votes to get on.
Yeah, I don't know. That's something that I wish CBS would have released, and I wish we could have seen the official list. I know
maybe the fact that we haven't seen him is indication that he didn't get many votes.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. I know that there was a list floating around there, but that was posted by Jim Early, who is not the most reliable source for any Survivor information. You could go find out stuff about him on Survivor Sucks if you haven't already. Kevin, what do you think about Keith Nail?
If I talk about Keith for more than 30 seconds, I will lose interest. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's like when I heat up macaroni and cheese for lunch, I know what I'm getting. It's like,
I just did that today.
No, I mean, Keith Nail, the reason I watch Survivor, and I assume the reasons you guys watch Survivor, is not for Keith Nail. So again, kind of invisible, not going to. I'm going to go look for this golf swing video because that sounds hilarious. in terms of he adds no character development for me. I realized he hasn't this season. He hasn't evolved from his first season. He adds no strategical value. His confessionals aren't exactly what I'm looking for either. So, I mean, I'm not a Keith Nail fan. So
yeah, I'm totally with you there.
Yeah, I know there are fans out there of Keith Nail, which is surprising to me.
I actually enjoy the comic relief that Keith Nail brings to the show. But in terms of he doesn't bring – I don't watch Survivor to see Keith Nail, if that makes sense. But we've got another caller on the line. So Shay Lynn, my good pal Shay Lynn Hopkins is here. Shay Lynn, how's it going?
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Shay Lynn.
What's up, guys?
Not much. Do you have a question for Kevin or Taryn or myself?
Who do you guys think is like the best spot for Final Three right now?
Who's in the best spot for Final Three?
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin, let's lay that one up to you. Who's in the best spot to, who do you think's in the best spot to get to the Final Three?
Abby Maria Gomez.
All right. And we talked about that a little bit earlier. Taryn, what do you think?
I'm going to say Kimmy. I think people are going to get so sick of Abby, they might not want her there.
Maybe. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm actually with Kimmy too. I think that Kimmy, has a better shot than Abby in my book, because she's viewed as loyal. She's loyal to the Bion crew. That they're like, oh yeah, Kimmy's a loyal soldier. We can stick with her. She'll help us out. We can work with her, and she's on our side. She's with us. Bion strong. Whereas Abby Maria is not necessarily viewed as being on that side. She's viewed as being someone who is not the most strategically savvy person. But Kimmy is also, I think, viewed in the same light. So because of that, I think that Kimmy's got a better shot. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if Abby's there instead of Kimmy. I think that we will – I think it's pretty safe to say one of those two will be in the final three no matter what.
Yeah, I think the two of them are probably in the final six, final five.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think hands down, because why would you get rid of anyone really like that? Any other questions for us, Shaylin?
I seen in the chat there was if someone thought like maybe like Andrew's gonna pin it on Steven for the vote,
right?
What do you guys think about that?
I don't know if we saw this week that Andrew was a little bit, he was desperate, and he went to Jeremy and he said, oh, do we have Steven? Is Steven okay? And Jeremy's like, yeah, we got Steve. And so I think that little reassurance was something that he really needed. I don't know if Sierra is going to try and pin it on Steven. If she tries that, maybe Savage will buy it. But I think if I'm Steven Fishback in that spot, I think he can convince Savage pretty well that it wasn't him, because he can just say, hey, look, like, why in the world would I vote for you when I know for a fact that Cass is going home? It makes zero sense for me to do anything like that. And Steven is somebody who I think Savage knows is a strategically savvy person. And I don't think he's the type to, I think he understands it and is going to recognize that. Kevin, would you agree with that?
I do agree with that. As someone who, you participated in one of these shows, it's really hard to hide votes. It's always a cool idea to sit home and be like, why don't you vote some person and blame some? Nah, like the truth usually comes out. Like, I don't think that is what the intentions are for. So I agree with that, Jordan.
Yeah, I think Sierra's going to own the vote anyway. So
she's going to say, yeah, I voted for you, Savage. Yeah.
And maybe if he does, like, Steven will just bring out another poll.
Exactly.
He'll convince Savage that he didn't do it.
Yeah, that's right. He can just recite another great poem from Gerard Manley Hopkins. And then
And that guy is not
he's
related
not related to,
me. To
you. Okay, I wanted to
no,
make sure.
100% no, 100% definitely
okay.
not.
That's too bad, because he's got a pretty – that would be pretty cool if, like, your great-grandpa – was named Gerard Manley Hopkins. I think that's a pretty sweet name.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, Shaylin, thank you so much for the question.
Thanks, Shaylin.
Oh, all right, no
talk to you later. All right. So that was Shaylin. Thank you, Shaylin, for calling. Appreciate that. We've got Vinyl. We got someone else who's brave to call in other than Taryn, who is my good buddy already, who I talk to on a regular basis on these things. So thank you, Shaylin, for calling. I do appreciate that a lot.
One thought I want to throw out to you guys.
Yeah.
After I watched this Merge episode, I turned it off. I was like, yeah, that was good. That was fun. But then I was like, oh, my God. If we had Jeff Varner here at the Merge episode to narrate us through the episode. Man. Oh, dear God, was Jeff ever strong in this season.
Yes, and that is something that I brought up. Again, another thing I brought to Rob on the voicemails was I said to him, I said, hey, you know, it would have been interesting if Jeff Varner would have been here in Cass's spot that last week, because I think Jeff might have been able to get himself out of that, because he's the kind of guy whose mind is always racing. He's always thinking of different scenarios, and it would have been really, really fun to have a wild card at the Merge, but not just a wild card, somebody who is a strategically savvy wild card, yes. Different than Kelly Wigglesworth. And now we have another caller on the line, the great Adam Rita, calling from Australia. Adam, what time is it there now? Is it 5 a.m.?
Yeah, it's 5 a.m. Yeah,
like, oh, my God.
What time did you wake up this past morning?
I haven't slept. It's Sunday, so I'm just gonna just have a lazy Sunday during the day. Cause why not?
Why not, bro?
I wanted to actually ask, do we think of family visits happening this season, and where do you think they're going to kind of place it? Because it does seem to, we talked about the whole double episode thing, or double elimination thing rather. So I'm interested to hear, do we have time for a family visit? Do we want to see a family visit?
Okay, that's a really good question. Kevin, let's throw that up to you.
This, if we're ever going to have a return of a card challenge, it should be this season, right? Have you guys ever missed that card challenge?
Let's bring dreams back, too, and yeah, man.
Great question, Adam. Very different. Yeah. And I mean, we have to see it, right? Isn't that a staple? Especially maybe not for us Survivor nerds, but for the casual fan, I feel like the casual fan really thrives on those emotional moments with the family visit. And another opportunity they could use of the season, I mean, if Keith Nail's there, we could see Wesley back again, who played Survivor. And if we see Sierra there, we could see Laura back, who played Survivor before, get some great confessionals from them as well. So I would expect it to come in for sure. And that the family episode always, for me, is an interesting one, whether they throw it or not, because then you have to pick people for the reward. And that one's truly emotional. Because, like, if you say, hey, Joe, I can't pick you, you can't enjoy the pizza with me, it's one thing. But then when you deprive someone of a family visit in a game that is so emotional, that can really, really be stressful. So I think we see the family visit. It wouldn't make sense for them to not have it, right?
Yeah, I think we'll see it. And another one too that I really hope we see is that I hope Kelly Wentworth gets there and we get to see some more Dale, because
that's right, Dale. Yeah.
I love Dale. I hope we get to see Dale. Taryn, when do you think we're going to see the family visit?
Let's see. When do they usually do it? I don't usually pay attention too
much. Well, I mean, it's in the last few seasons, I feel like it's been towards the end. So,
yeah,
like,
because they don't want to fly out a ton of people.
Seven or eight, I think.
Yeah. You know,
even six, Adam, I feel like they've done it before, right? So,
yeah, just before finale. Yeah.
Like, Kagyan, was it not the episode before finale or at the finale?
Yeah. It was like Final Four, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really late in the game. And also, I would love to see Spencer get there, because his sister was great last time that she was on as well.
But how great would it be if it was his girlfriend after talking about the whole I love you thing?
Yep.
That would be great. But, I mean, if he didn't say I love you to his girlfriend, right before.
Savage's wife as well.
Yeah. That would be cool. Yeah, that's cool. That's another one. But I think if he didn't say I love you to his girlfriend, I don't think he's bringing her out to visit him, unfortunately. I think that's a really good question, Adam. I think that that's something that we haven't been talking about yet, and I think it's going to be fun because potentially we're going to see some people that we've seen before. Val, although Val is pregnant at the time, right?
I think Jeremy
was saying, so Val probably wouldn't be there, but
yeah, maybe. Jeremy probably wouldn't even want Val there.
No, probably not. That first episode
where we talked about he didn't want anybody to know. Like,
exactly, because then she would be pregnant and people would see it and it would blow up his spot. So yeah, I'm not quite too sure. I would love if the wizard, Stephen Fishback, if he could bring out his good friend, Coach Benwick, the Dragon Slayer, as his family visit.
Tyson Apostle as well. Why not bring Tyson along?
Yeah. Tyson, that
I'd
would
love
be
to see Tyson.
Do you know what would also be a great narrative? If Dale came for the family visit and ended up screwing Kelly over again somehow.
If Dale's like, hey, wait, what's that, Kelly? You got a hidden immunity idol? What?
He criticizes their cooking.
Yeah. Oh, man, that would be amazing. Or I wish somehow maybe like Keith Nail brought Missy as his loved one, and then Missy and Dale fight again. Missy just shows up. Exactly. That would be amazing.
Yeah, Dale would probably fight with Kimmy though.
Yeah, Dale probably would fight with Kimmy. I feel like in Abby Maria too, and Dale. Dale should have been on this show. I think Dale would have been arguably better than Keith Nail. I think that would have been hilarious if Dale was back. Dale is so good. I love Dale.
Yeah, but then we wouldn't get Kelly, because Kelly's game would be ruined.
Yeah, Kevin, I do love a lot of weird people. Let's see. Dale Wentworth, Paul Jackson.
Pop and Paul.
I'm trying to think who are some of the other weird people that I really do like. Ginger Ninja is one of my personal favorites, although who doesn't love Ginger Ninja? I do love some interesting characters on these shows. But yeah, I'm a weird guy. What can I say?
Well, I seem to be the only one, only super fan that cares for Andrew Savage. Like, everyone's hating on me because I like Andrew Savage.
And and Adam, let's talk to – I want to ask you about this because I think a lot of the super fans out there are not the highest on Andrew Savage, but I know that a lot of people that are more casual viewers of the show, I think and I'm not sure, maybe after this past week, my dad has flipped on Savage, but I know people like my dad that watched the show really were rooting for Andrew Savage at the start of this game. So yeah. Adam, why do you cheer for Andrew Savage? Is it because of the nostalgia factor? And what do you think about some of these moments where he's kind of acting all high and mighty? How do you look past that, or do you just try to ignore it? What's your thought process on that?
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess my thought process is I put in my own internal biases in there. Like, I've kind of wanted, like, a lawyer to do well at this game as well, having come from a legal background myself, right?
Right.
And, you know, when Cass wasn't that person, like, at the start of Cagayan, before the season started, I was very high on Cass. I was like, oh, I'm excited. She seems quite smart. And then she plays, and then I, you know, barrack for Tony Vlachos, like you were, Jordan. I was Team Tony all the way. And then this season, I get to see more of Cass, and I appreciate her a little bit more. But I think Andrew, and also having rewatched Pearl Islands quite recently, it kind of reinforced for me that I felt like he really got short shrifted because of a twist. And that was kind of unfair. Like, I don't think he maybe would have won Pearl Islands, but I still think that kind of endears himself to me for Andrew. And normally I kind of hate the alphas. Like, I don't like Brad Culpepper's game. But for some reason, I think, like, Andrew, I don't know, he seems like relatively competent, and he seems to have a good social game. You've got to give him credit. Like, these people get along with him. Like, we might not like seeing him in terms of the alpha bro-y game that he plays, or that he, like, you know, hates these, like, non-leaders, but he does get along with the people that he needs to get along with. Like, it's not just good tribal luck that he's had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, as much as Kevin and I were kind of sandbagging Savage a little bit earlier, talking about, we're like, oh yeah, he's not that great. But, you know, he is very good at broing down with the guys. And I think socially, in that sense, he's great. And in terms of getting a crew together and leading them and saying, all right, guys, it's us to the end, and we're going to roll here. I'm the captain of this ship. I'm the, you know, football quarterback, whatever you want to say. He's good at that. So I will give you that, Adam. I do agree. I just think that with him, and in terms of the second chance thing, I think that that's a really good point, is he really is the definition of a person who deserves a second chance. I mean, he did get screwed pretty bad by that twist. I don't think he would have won, but he would have done better than he ultimately did that first go round. So yeah, I hear you in that sense, but I don't know. It's just certain things about him just irk me. It's just the relatable thing. I just can't relate to him, and I think that a lot of us super fans, because he doesn't like Steven, because he doesn't like the wimpy little non-leaders, those guys, then it's hard for us to like him and to root for him. We need to see more from him, and I think that's why. But I totally understand why you root for him, and especially coming from a law background, I think that you want to see somebody do good on the show, because we've constantly seen these Matt Quinlans. I mean, those types of characters.
Dan Kaye was a lawyer as well.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We've seen them crash and burn time and time again. Well, let's get into one other question. And before we do that, Edward Morris brought up in the chat the fact that another weird character that I love on Survivor, and that is Steve Chicken Morris. So there's another one that I really do love. So I forgot about that one. So Edward Morris, thank you for bringing up good old Chicken Morris. For those of you who forget, damn. But let's go to this one from Foss Chitz. It says, where do you think Jeremy's loyalty lies, with Steven and Kimmy or Savage and Tasha? Kevin, let's throw that one up to you. Where do you think that at the end of the, if Jeremy's going to pick who he's more loyal to, which side does he swing to?
I think Jeremy has a huge fear of being the biggest target. Jeremy, we've heard multiple confessionals from him. He's very afraid of being the biggest target. So why would he go with Kimmy and Steven? Because if he's in that group, he will be the biggest target. I really see him bro-ing down with Savage. And I really feel like he's going to go with the bros. That just makes sense. With the narrative we've gotten so far, he is obsessed with keeping muscles around him. And Savage is another perfect guy for him to have in as we get down to 8, 7, 6. Of course, that changes when you get to 5 and 4 and eventually 3. But this middle part of the post-jury game, I see him being loyal to like if he has to say right now, get rid of Savage or Steven, I think he kicks Steven to the side just because of that factor.
But then do you think Jeremy replaces Tasha? Like, I don't see Savage growing down with keeping Tasha around. I just see Jeremy replacing Tasha, possibly. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense as well. I can see that point for sure.
Taryn, what do you agree with Kevin on that one?
You know, it's tough because we've never seen Jeremy post-merge. You know, I'm not exactly sure what his plan was last time before he got kicked out. I do think he definitely wants to surround himself with people, but how many people does he need, right? Maybe he can keep Joe around and maybe Joe is enough. We know we saw him say that he wanted to be Steven's JT. So does that mean he wants to bring Steven down to the end? And I mean, obviously a Steven Kimmy final three is probably a pretty good place for him, or at least how he sees it. But at the same time, you know, he's definitely worried about, well, if it's me, Kimmy, and Steven, then I'm the major threat going into final three. So maybe I have to win that final four immunity, and maybe I don't want to do that. So I don't know. I could see it going either way, ultimately.
I mean, that's one thing that I'm really, I'm very curious to see how that plays out, because I think at some point, maybe Jeremy will be forced to do something based on the actions of other people like a Steven or like some of these other players, but I'm excited to see which way he swings, because right now we don't really know. We haven't really seen. We've seen that he's tight with Steven and Kimmy because he's been with them the entire game. They've never been on different tribes. They've always been together, but he's also shown that he's got some loyalty to Savage and Tasha as well. He's got good relationships with them.
Here's something I'm thinking though, because Savage and Tasha, they also kind of have Wigglesworth, right?
Right.
And so he might kind of see that as, well, they're kind of a group and maybe I don't fit in there. So maybe he's thinking, well, I have my own group of me, Steven, and Kimmy. And then he, I think, also thinks that he's got maybe Spencer on the side. Maybe Spencer is the big threat and along with Joe that he's going to drag along for a while. And then maybe when one of them goes, he'll strike at maybe Wigglesworth. Maybe he'll take out Wigglesworth first so that there's more room to play with both sides. That might be what he's thinking.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's going to be good. I think there's still the best is yet to come from this season, and that's what's really, really exciting. And I can't wait to see how who wins, who walks away with $1 million. Somebody's going to be a very happy camper at the end of this thing, and a lot of probably 19 people are going to be very upset. But absolutely.
Can I throw one question out to you three guys specifically here? Yeah. Well, okay, yeah. I started watching Survivor season 10 onward. I've gone back, I've watched clips and stuff, but never the full seasons. And anyway, as a person who hasn't seen a lot of these early old school players play, let's just go through the list here. Like, we have Jervis from season 1. We have like Wigglesworth. We have Rupert. We have a bunch of players, Mike Scoopin, yeah, that have been completely underwhelming to me. Like, from in terms of return, Colby Donaldson, Heroes versus Villains. Ugh, yeah. Like, what a lot. Yeah. Like, it's just like, maybe you guys can explain and fill me in. What is with these old school players just coming back and completely underwhelming us? Like, what is going on here? Where have we truly enjoyed someone coming back from a really early season?
Well, yeah, that's the one that
Jeff Varner. I mean, yeah, there you go. There's one.
Yeah, Jeff Varner. Who had Taryn? You got someone?
I mean, she wasn't completely underwhelming, but Tina, I think, did okay when she came back.
Yeah, Tina. I would say Tina was good. I think that she did well that third time on Blood versus Water.
I think if a few things go Tina's way, right, she almost wins Blood versus Water. Like, if a few things go her way, vote wise, and Tyson is like, they catch on to Tyson a little bit quicker. That's the second two-time winner in Tina Wesson. So,
yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons why the old school players tend to be a little more disappointing. And I think that's because, first of all, back then the strategy was less refined. It was more about surviving and getting into an alliance and sticking with that alliance and kind of being otherwise strategically boring. And then the popular characters from back then were popular because of their personalities less than their strategic ability. So we're bringing back people who, like Kimmy, who was kind of explosive, and we remember her for the finger wagging, but obviously didn't do anything strategically. Jervis, again, was just completely all character in his season, almost zero strategy. So I feel like that's probably why we're the old school players tend to be a little disappointing in the strategic department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jerry Manthi actually was, she did well also on Survivor Heroes versus Villains. Not everybody is the biggest fan of Jerry, but I think it was cool to see her come back and show that she's got a mind for the game, because the first time it was in Australia, everybody just hated Jerry and just thought, oh, Jerry, she's so mean, she's a big villain, even though she really did nothing compared to what normal villains do. Like her in Australia compared to Abby Maria now, I could not imagine if you flip-flopped those. I think Jerry Manthi would be the biggest hero of this season. And Abby Maria, I don't know what would happen to Abby Maria. She probably would have I'm not sure, because Jerry got booed off of the stage at the reunion show of All Stars. It was bad with her. So, yeah, and I think Taryn brought up a really good point there. I think it's more so the characters that are coming back. These are the people that we have a lot of nostalgia for. I think if we were to see Lex or Richard Hatch or Brian Heidick or people like that, if they're even someone like Dina from Survivor Amazon, if we were to see people like that come back, I think it would be a lot different, and we would get more of a Jeff Varner like result with those people back on the show.
I think Varner is probably the first old school player they've chosen because he was so gamey in his first season. Yeah, that was like what he was known for.
Exactly. Yeah, like I think that Hatch is a great one too, right? Jeff Varner was supposed to be the Richard Hatch of Survivor Australia or the Australian Outback. It didn't work for him, but I mean, they saw that upside in him then. And I think that they figured, hey, if we bring him back now, he's also going to do very well. He's got a chance of doing excellent. And we saw that this season. One other person too, I think, that is old school that we saw come back once, but not really, and who I think would do fantastic and is one of my favorite players of all time, is Johnny Fairplay. I think that Johnny Fairplay, if we were to see him play again, I think he would do a very good job. And I think he's got a really bad reputation just based off of the grandma lie and some of the other things he's done post-show. But if you go back and watch Pearl Islands, he did a great job that season, and he really was replicated what Rob Cesternino did in Amazon and did a fantastic job. And I would highly recommend, and Kevin, I would recommend going back and watching Pearl Islands if you are going to go back anytime to watch any of those seasons. It's a great season, and Fairplay is a big reason for that. But you could see Savage, you could see the great Rupert Boneham. We know he's one of your favorites of all time.
God.
Rupert, I'd still defend Rupert in Pearl Islands. I think he was an entertaining character. It's as soon as he comes back the first time that it's like, whoa, this got immediately old.
Yeah, and I think it's because once Rupert realized, oh, wait, like I'm kind of a big deal, sort of, then I think it kind of went to his head.
Yeah, and I mean, if you went back and watched Pearl Islands after seeing him, his later versions, you're not going to get it. But
when I rewatched it, I had the context of Rupert, and I was like, he acts the exact same way. And I still don't understand why I liked him at all back then. So, yeah. For me as a kid, it was he stole the shoes, and then
that was it.
And then it was like, oh, I love this guy; he's great.
And he stole the shoes, and he was like kind of bullied, and I think that was basically it.
Yeah. That's really what it comes down to.
And you got three other shots because of that,
and $1 million,
$1 million,
American Tribal Council,
and his wife got a shot too.
Yeah,
His wife,
Laura
Boneham, the most compelling reality television show character of all time, honestly. I don't think we've ever seen somebody who's brought more to the table and it's been more multidimensional than Laura Boneham on a TV show before.
Not since Kelly Wigglesworth this season.
I think Wigglesworth brought more than Laura Boneham. I really do.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, Laura took Rupert out of the game, so...
That's true. She is my hero for doing
just
that. Just
the size of Rupert's head is displayed in the fact when Laura got voted out, they're angry at me. That's why they're ready. Like, oh my God. It's just the the narcissism displayed in that first episode still gives me, oh.
Well, I mean, yeah, he, and I know he was actually in Langley, British Columbia, which is very close to my hometown. I believe it was a year ago or 2 years ago. And a friend of mine went to that event and asked Rupert, hey, Rupert, who is the best survivor ever? And he's like, well, obviously it's me. I'm the best survivor of all time. And he did an interview with Survivor Oz saying that. So yeah, Rupert,
I love how me and Jordan can just like rip Survivor players, but whenever we do another podcast, we're like, oh, we're like very like, how do you tell? Cause we might actually interact with those people.
Yeah. Rupert, like, exactly.
You. Yeah. But what if you bump into Rupert at reality rally?
I mean, I'll have
Rupert, I'm sure I will preface what I said by saying Rupert is a very nice man. I'm sure in real life, mm-hmm. he just doesn't have a lot of self-awareness. And that is something that Kevin and I in particular like from our reality TV show contestants. And when you lack that, it's just, we don't really enjoy it. Big Brother, yeah. Survivor, regardless. It's not fun.
I don't know if you guys were following the rumors for the people that were going to be on the original Blood versus Water, but yeah. Rumors were that obviously that Rob was going to be on it.
Yeah.
And as soon as we found out that Rob wasn't going to be on it, we found out that Rupert was. It was like Rupert was the replacement for Rob. It was so unbelievably disappointing.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, I remember seeing those rumors and I was so excited. And then Rob was like playing up the fact that, hey, this is the last Survivor Know It Alls. And all I got to say is, see you later. That's it. Bye. And then, it was Rob is the master of doing that. But that would have been so, can you imagine how good that season would have been if Rob Cesternino and Nicole Cesternino were on that season, or even Danny Cesternino. I think that would have been pretty cool. Nicholas Gosum is saying, what's the subject of what we're talking about? And I think that's a sign that we should probably wind things down here. We've gotten incredibly off topic from the latest Survivor Cambodia episode. Adam, any final thoughts you want to get in here before you go to sleep?
Yes, I just wanted to say, like, I don't know. I think with Wigglesworth being so disappointing, maybe we might go away from these old school players. Like, they might try to cast more Varna types in the future, but I feel like there's not a lot left. Like, there's not a lot left of these old school players.
But again, we're a weird like 3% of the population that watches the show. A lot of people are just casual fans. Oh, I remember her. Let me tune in next week. So yeah.
I still think they're holding out hope that they're going to bring somebody like Wigglesworth back, and she is going to be this person that a lot of people wanted her to be, where she was playing up the fact that she never watched TV in 14 years or whatever, and she's actually going to do stuff in the game. And if that happens, that's going to be like a big story because everybody knows who she is.
Well, if they want to do that, they should bring back Jenna Lewis from season one. I think.
I know, right?
Jenna Lewis.
Yes, that is who they need to bring back. I'm with you on that, and the idea of they're trying to rope in people who, some of those 40 million plus people that were watching Survivor Borneo. And if Wigglesworth does hit and she is good, then it's a huge success. If she's not, it's a strong enough season in which it can carry itself on its own without her being a big factor. And I think that that's what they're finding in this scenario. But yeah, I hope they don't go away from it, because I really think that Jeff Warner was awesome. It's just picking the right people.
I want them to keep going after Greg from season one.
Greg Bewis.
I want him back so much.
Yeah, Greg Bewis and Edward Morris in the chat is saying somebody go find Colleen. Yeah, those would be quite amazing if those two were to come back to the show someday. But yeah, I don't know. A part of me doesn't want to see Greg Bewis because I feel like I might be disappointed in what happens. But
yeah, he's older and less fun.
Yeah, I don't know, because like, Greg Buse was just so great the first time. So I'm not too sure. Coach's Beard in the chat is saying Sean Rector. There's a few old school people I think that could come back and bring a lot to the table still. It's just finding the right old school people. T-Bird Cooper at the top of my list of those people as well, who I would like to see, because I love T-Bird and good old Coop Dog. I think she would have been great on this season, and it's too bad that we didn't get to see her. But Adam, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, guys.
You have a great night and get some sleep.
Cheers.
All right. Bye. Okay, so Adam is out of here. Okay, Taryn, any final thoughts before you sign off tonight?
I think Steven has a better shot in the final two than you were giving him.
Okay.
And why
is just right now you think he does?
Yeah, I mean, so I think one of the main reasons he lost in Tokenchines was because nobody realized what he had done. It was all behind the scenes, but now he has the reputation of being that player. And I think if he gets to the end again, he's going to have a much easier time selling, like, hey, look what I did it again. I was behind the scenes. I manipulated it. And now I'm here sitting in the final two. Maybe I'm with Jeremy, but who cares? I'm the one that got us here because I did the planning.
Okay. Yeah. I think
he has a chance.
He's got a chance. It's just, I don't know. I'm not too sure. And maybe Steven will end up in a spot where in mindset, he'll start realizing closer to the end of the game that, oh wait, this is similar to JT. I got to get rid of
Jeremy.
That's
what I'm afraid of. Yeah. I'm afraid he's underestimating his ability to sell himself.
To sell his case to win them money. Thank you, Tarrant, for coming on the show today. I really do appreciate it, man. We had a good chat. Thank you so much.
It's a lot of fun. Tarrant, man.
Yeah.
Take care, and a Ginger Ninja 604 prop up to you, my friend.
See you later, buddy.
See ya. All right, so there goes Taryn. Kevin, before we get out of here, one last question, and this was one that I had for you, and I need to scroll up. And this one was from Jay Vorsky, and Jay Vorsky wants to know, Kevin, if you had to pick one remaining contestant to stake and coach in poker, who would it be and why?
Oh, my God. Who could be the best poker player? I mean, Spencer Bledsoe is like a well-renowned chess player, right? Yeah, he's far more intelligent than I will ever be. So, I mean, I would grab Spencer and I would get someone else to coach him, and he could be very good very quickly.
I think Spencer's the pick. Very cerebral guy. I think you and him have a lot in common.
The last person would have. I mean, Savage is super intelligent, but he would do fine too. Abby Maria Gomez would be the last person I'd want to stake at a poker table, I think.
No, you're all idiots. You're morons. Why are you?
You bluff me, you're dead to me.
If you bluff with me, you're dead. These idiots, these morons. Why? Look, why? Fold. I have pocket aces. He told me pocket aces is the best hand. I have it. I mean, it's the worst hand. I have it. Fold.
Dude, thank you for an awesome 2 hours here of Survivor Talk.
Thank you for spending your time with me, Kevin. I really do appreciate you being so generous with your time today. I think that we had a great chat, a great discussion. I was a little concerned. I thought, oh, I just talked Survivor for 2 hours with Rob this week. I might be all out of stuff to say. But no. You and I really, honestly, I think you and I could probably talk about just about anything for 2 hours and make a podcast out of it. So maybe we should try in the off season to come up with like the most obscure topic and see how long we can go with it, and then try to apply to the Guinness Book of World Records and see if we can.
The most boring podcast ever. Talk about Jell-O for 3 hours.
Talk about the history of Jell-O with the fortress. But Kevin, where can people find you and see what you're up to?
Twitter's the best place, at Kevin Rob Martin. And I am streaming Fortress, baby. That's right. What am I doing with my life right now? I'm actually streaming to Twitch 6 days a week, full time, playing small stakes poker tournaments on Twitch. I'm on there pretty consistently. We've had a fun week of poker. Yeah, developing a little bit of community over there. If poker's your thing, that's a cool. Love to see you there. If it's not, it's all right as well.
So is there a link for people to find you on Twitch, Kevin?
Yeah, you can get it through my Twitter. You can get it through my Twitter bio. It's KevinMartin987 on Twitch. Yeah, it's pretty. We're there all the time. We're going to actually start that up and get that going in the next hour here.
Okay, awesome. So definitely check that out. See what Kevin's doing. And Kevin, I did see a tweet of yours the other day. You were at the final table and you had King and you lost. And then so you made a bed and slept on the floor.
We're definitely having some fun with it. We've done some weird things. We actually we got a paintball canvas outside. And every time we knock someone out, we actually shoot a paintball gun at this canvas.
Ooh.
This picture of art to someone in a couple weeks or whatever. So we got some fun ideas going over there. We're having fun creating some stuff.
That's awesome. So yeah, definitely check out what Kevin's doing on Twitch. I myself need to check more of that stuff out.
You're a busy man, understandable.
Yeah, full-time school, doing the podcast and homework and that kind of thing. It's tough, but I will hopefully over December, once I got some free time, I can definitely check more of that stuff out. But Kevin, thank you so much. Follow him on Twitter. He's at Kevin Rob Martin. Make sure you follow me on Twitter as well. I'm at Jordan Parhar. And check out what I'm doing and keep up to date with everything with the Happy Hour. Next week, we will be back. We'll be talking about Survivor Cambodia once again. We'll see what happens. Hopefully it's not too predictable of an episode. Not 100% sure who the guest is, but I've got a few people in mind. It should be a good show. So make sure you check that out. We will probably be back live on Saturday on Blab at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. So definitely check that out. One other thing before we leave today, make sure if you are a fan of the podcast, if you could please leave a review on iTunes. That really means a lot to me because that helps the podcast grow and it helps other people find the show. So if you could go to iTunes and leave a review there, that would be great. So there's a link, robiswebsite.com/rehappyhour. And from there, you can leave a review at the end of the season, the end of the Survivor season, that is. I will be giving away 2 Skype calls with random people that left reviews for me. So how about that, Kevin? Some people will be talking to me on Skype for 30 minutes. That would be kind of
fun.
Right?
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it.
So if you want to do that, maybe I'll see if, and I kind of want to just have a chat with the Ginger Ninja for a little bit. So maybe I'll ask him to leave a review and that way he can end up.
I love that guy.
But yeah, me too. He's great. But yeah, I that is something you can do. And if you don't want to do that, if you want to give up on that, if you think, oh, you know, if you're like me, if you're a wimpy little non-leader who never wins anything, you can also have a Skype call with me as well by donating to my Reality Rally campaign in which we are raising money for Michelle's Place, which gives back to families and people that are suffering through breast cancer. So it's a really good cause. We're trying to raise money for that. So for every dollar you donate, you can speak to me on Skype for 1 minute. So we can do with any budget, anything works. So if you want to talk to me for 10 minutes, donate $10. We can talk for 10 minutes. If you want to talk for an hour, we can do it for donate $60 or talk for an hour. I'm doing one later today with my good buddy Coach's Beard. So Coach's Beard and I will be talking in about an hour or so on Skype. So that'll be really fun. So shout out to him for donating. It really means a lot. So check that out. There's a link on my Twitter page. It's pinned to the top and you can find that there. Okay. Before we wrap up today, Kevin, we need a hashtag for this episode. So if you guys in the chat room want to help us out about something that we talked about in this podcast, that is memorable. What do you think, Kevin? What do you think the hashtag?
We had some good moments. I'm not good with these hashtags.
Well, I think there was one earlier, and I believe, what did you say? You said Weekend Wavage. I think that was
Weekend Wavage.
I think that was a good one. So if you guys want to tweet Kevin and I, so tweet us. Let us know what you thought about the show. Use the hashtag Weekend Wavage, and we can find that on Twitter and keep up with what you guys say. I love checking out what you guys have to say, good or bad. And if you have any constructive criticism for me, I'm always interested in that. I'm still learning this podcast kind of stuff, so I have a lot to learn and a lot to grow on. So if you think I need something to work on and you don't like something I do, please let me know. I want to hear about it so that way I can get better. So leave some comments at robinswebsite.com. Tweet us, use the hashtag, and we will see all of that. Kevin, thank you so much for your time today. I had a blast. To everybody in the Happy Hour Nation, thank you so much for tuning in once again. For it's Kevin Martin, I'm Jordan Parker. Hashtag Weekend Wavage. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Reality TV, we're happy hour. Reality TV.